I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care
if we're a little bit late. So this show kind of aired on Friday, March 3, 2023. Except there were problems in the studio. It didn't go out over the air very well, and it didn't record very well. And so I'm just playing the clips that I had done. Oh, and the internet wasn't working in the studio either, so I didn't have any of my any songs from YouTube. but I played some songs from CDs. I remembered how to play a CD. Played some Nina Simone and some Earth, Wind, and Fire. Anyway, the clips I have for today are about cancer and cancer and prevention and puppet parade. Sadie and Yael talking about the puppet parade for Purim. The parade's Sunday, Sunday the 5th of March. Oh, and I have an interview with Heather Diaz from Forbes Library. Just a very brief clip. Oh yeah, and Ben Winter and me talking about Amish communities and Amish economy, clotheslines and stuff. It's Friday again, which means another edition of Out There. What is it gonna be today? I don't know yet. I'm pre-recording this on Friday afternoon, March. What is the date? The 3rd, maybe? Sure, that sounds good. 2023, I know the year. I'm just coming from doing a morning shift at Cans for Cancer. I was out at Valley Recycling, counting cans, sorting cans, bottles, pulling deposits out of the containers, roll away there. It's Friday. Fridays are often busy there, but today was especially busy because they're predicting some snow tonight, so tomorrow Valley Recycling is going to be closed. And anyway, so it was like busy, like a Friday and a Saturday morning all put together, kind of. Well, no, not that busy. But in the busyness, in the hustle and bustle of me picking cans, sorting cans. Hang on, that rattle back there is some pie pans, cookie trays, and a pan skillet that I salvaged from scrap metal. Anyway, so in the hustle and bustle at counting cans, sorting cans for cancer. So the other like 4 or 5 people that work there and the founder who has throat cancer, they all smoke. Everyone smokes. I was thinking of that because I borrowed someone else's gloves this morning to count with because my biking winter gloves aren't very good for the dexterity you need to sort and count cans and bottles. So I borrowed someone else's gloves. And then just on my way back, I stopped for lunch on the rail trail here. And when I was eating my lunch, I was like, I sniffed my fingers. I'm like, my fingers smell like cigarette smoke. What did I put my hands into? And then I finally realized, oh yeah, it was one of my coworkers' gloves from there. Who was probably smoking with their gloves on or something. But anyway, this whole idea of hustling to make some money for Cancer Support Network, Cancer Connection, also to employ people that work there, it just feels stupid. It just feels like, what's a good analogy? Like trying to empty the bathtub with a teaspoon while the water's still running. It's like with most things in life, especially public health, like prevention is so much more effective than treatment. How's your walk? And it's pretty infuriating that the tobacco and cigarette companies are still pushing their product. But I guess some people would say that the benefits they get from nicotine are worth it. And most of us have some kind of bad habit that's not in our best interests and that causes harm to society that other people have to pay the consequences of, whether it's video games or driving or coffee or chocolate or flying to Trinidad. Anyway, it's enough to make a person cynical. Anyway, so here's something else that's occupied my thoughts in the last couple weeks. Well, the bigger picture of what I've really been thinking about is how human beings share space, living space, houses, apartments, the space where we circumambulate, some word, around each other, especially living space. A couple things have been going on in my life that have made me think about this intensely lately. One of them being I live with a bunch of people and we have dynamics. And another being, so my family in Kentucky, when I'm there with them, it's a couple hundred acres of mountainside, lots of animals, farmland, homestead, some older people who need some support, some people who don't speak English and know very many people. Anyway, so I made a profile, a hosting profile on a couple of international work exchange networks. One is Workaway, that's the one I went to Trinidad on, and the other is HelpX. So I made a hosting profile, and then I've gotten a couple of requests, which is pretty exciting. Nothing's worked out yet, but one of the requests that I got a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, I guess, this was on HelpX. Someone read the profile and contacted me and said, you know, I read your profile. I can't stop thinking about it. It sounds like a really good fit for me. I love to be alone in the country and work hard on projects, and I'm looking for a long-term home. But I really like to be alone and work alone. I don't want to share a room in a house. I wouldn't want to eat meals with you. I'd rather take my plate to my own living space and eat alone. I get along fine with people. I just like to be alone. So I stopped in at Forbes Library to see what there was here that I could tell people about for today's show. And here is Heather Diaz, who I'm trying to get an interview with. And Heather said I could interview her next Thursday. But for now, Heather, anything you want to say about the library?
You may not know that we have new hours, new-ish. We're open 10 to 8 Monday through Thursday and 10 to 6 Friday and Saturday, so more nighttime hours. So you should come by. We have an incredible collection, nice staff, and lots of nice places to hang out.
10
to
8.
That was the mini interview.
Yes, yes. 8 o'clock, that's pretty late at night.
Yeah, so Monday through Thursday, we're open till 8 p.m. Cool. It's very quiet here if you need in the evening, if you need to do work or have a meeting. It's very nice for that.
If you want to do audio work and you bring a pair of headphones, can you plug into a library computer?
Definitely, yes. Yeah.
Okay. What about, do you know if any of the computers have Audacity on them?
They don't, although we are working on setting up like a kind of editing lab up in the study room on the second floor, and that computer will have Audacity. Mm. But okay. It's not quite ready yet, so stay tuned.
Okay. All right. That's intrigue. We'll keep that for next week. Thanks, Heather.
Bye, Ruthie.
Okay. All right, so in typical style, it's Friday afternoon. I'm scrambling to figure out what I'm going to do for my show. Someone else at the library, I checked my email, and there was an email from Ariel and Sadie, and I don't know who's that email from.
Yeah, the whole crew. It's us and my friend Weaver, a couple other folks, whoever signs off.
So they're working on a parade for Sunday, a puppet parade. Sadie, can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, so on Monday, it's going to be Purim, which is my favorite Jewish holiday. And this is kind of like the topsy-turvy holiday, where everything is not as it seems, and there's this grand story. It's one of the only Jewish stories that doesn't really involve God. It's just about what the human people are up to, and all their power, and their decisions, and their mistakes. So great topics for us to probe and explore. And so, yeah, we're down here building a bunch of paper mache puppets, doing large-scale sort of bread and puppet style art to bring it out to the streets and tell a story about grief and resilience and growth, and yeah, we're really excited.
Wow, so what kind of puppets are you making?
Well, we're making some paper mache bird heads. We're going to make an evil robot head. We're going to have a horse cart. There's going to be people involved with the bird heads and with the robot and with the horse cart. So animals, people, animal people, pinatas, eggs, rebirth, all of that kind of stuff in the puppets.
Are the pinatas and eggs to be busted? Or?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
we're
yeah.
We're going to do some busting.
But what's inside, you'll have to come and find out.
Come when, where?
Oh, yeah. So this Sunday we'll be launching on Summer Street in Northampton at 1:30, and we'll be taking it through town. So we'll cross over King Street and then head down towards Bridge Street School and on towards Holly Street.
Have you done this before?
Oh, yeah. I think this is our fifth one. So we're getting it better under our belt, but there's things to learn every time. New mistakes to make.
So. How much planning and organization does it take?
It's an excellent question. Depends on the scale. So actually, our last parade was a much bigger scale. We performed for about 350 people. Usually we just take it through the neighborhood. So for something like this, I put out an email to about 300 people saying, if you want to make a puppet parade, please come. About 12 people usually come from that initial list. And then we put our heads together. I was really excited this year. There's 2 8-year-olds that are on the main organizing committee, and their ideas are just incredible. Mm-hmm. And we ask a lot of questions of each other. And then for about a month, we're meeting and writing back and forth. And then after that, it's kind of showtime. So the week before is really more intensive. Yeah. And we have some more puppeteers coming down in and out of our basement studio where we're working.
Hello. So can I ask about some of the representations? Like, how do you make something represent something? Mm. Like, okay, so you said the robots are representing evil.
Well, yeah. Maybe it'll be a robot. Maybe it'll be something else, still to be determined. But I think in the planning process, when we were trying to figure out the story and the imagery at the same time, it was a process of letting both of them inform the other one. So we came up with the birds first and then a story for the birds. But then we were like, well, if we're doing birds, then we have to do eggs. If we're doing eggs, then we have to do a nest. And so it's kind of a what came first, the chicken or the egg situation. But developing both at the same time, I think, helps establish what means what in terms of imagery.
Yeah, and I'll say all of this we pull from traditional Ashkenazi sources. So the parade is really influenced. We're mostly a collective of Ashkenazi Jewish people, though many different kinds of people participate. So that means Jewish people whose ancestors have roots in Central and Eastern Europe, Poland, Belarus, Lithuania, Russia, Ukraine, those sort of places. And so the bird's heads actually come from something really exciting called the Bird's Head Haggadah, which is actually a document for the next holiday, Passover, Pesach. There was this prohibition against something called the graven image. So the second commandment, it says people should not draw God. And back in the Middle Ages, these artists were very worried, maybe I'm drawing God if I draw a person, because it says every person is created in the image of God. And so these artists got very creative and they made human people with birds' heads. And so that's actually where our bird's head imagery comes from. I think, you know, one explanation is the graven image, but the other explanation is we have like a surviving text of weird artists from the 1200s that just made this document. And now we think this is an amazing example of art from the 1200s, but maybe they're just like us, you know, strange artists. So
are there people around the country in other parts of the world doing Purim puppet parades?
The parade format is something we came up with during COVID to make sure we were mobile and accessible and able to bring things to friends. For example, the first year a friend broke their ankle, so we wanted to make sure that they had a way to celebrate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of people celebrate Purim in a lot of different ways.
It's true. This week around the world will be like burlesque versions of Purim, drag versions of Purim, versions that are more of like reading a script on stage. I'm sure puppetry will be somewhere. It's possible a parade is happening somewhere else. We never know. But lots of different kinds of revelry.
Mm-hmm. So the storyline, can you say any more about that?
For our parade or for the holiday Purim? Because they do diverge.
Oh, can you tell me both?
Let's see. Okay.
I can do this.
You got the story of Purim.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. The short version of the story of Purim is there's a king named Ahasuerus in Persia, and he has a wife, Queen Vashti, and he asks Vashti. They're throwing really big parties. They're both throwing their own parties. So he has a party and she has a party and they're both really having a lot of fun. And then he's like, Vashti, come dance for me. And she's like, no. And he's like, well, you're not my wife anymore. So she's out of the story. And then he's like, well, it's time to find a new wife. Hosts a beauty pageant. Tons of people come. It's another really big party. And in the crowd is this shining light, the beauty of Persia, Esther. And she's Jewish, but no one knows. And so she becomes the king's new wife. Then her cousin uncle is a nice guy and looking out for her and is hanging around the palace. He overhears a plot to kill the king. He tells the king, gains some favor. The king's advisor is this evil man named Haman.
Boo!
And he doesn't like the Jews. He especially doesn't like Mordecai. He develops this whole plot to kill all of them. He draws lots to decide when that's going to happen. Mordecai finds out, tells Esther she has to reveal her identity to her husband in order to save the Jews. She does that. It works. Big parade. Everything is not as it seems. That's, yeah, the story in short.
Thanks for sharing that.
And at the end of that story, something really terrible happens, which is we hear, so there was all these people in the story that were supposedly planning to kill the Jews. And then we learn that the Jewish people, they turn and they actually kill all those people. So it's this horrible and intense end to the story. So what we were thinking about with the parade is, how do we deal with our desensitization to mass death, which is happening around us all the time, especially now in the midst of the pandemic? And so the story of our script kind of takes that as a beginning. So we come in and there's this sort of evil overlord that represents the system. The kids really came up with this idea, who is like, has all these computer keyboards and is just like in this horrible evil office. Uh-huh. And is commanding the bird people again that they have to play out the story again and again and again. And they can't leave the story. And at the end of the story, each time they go splat. So the audience sees the birds go splat, 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 splat. This one dies, splat. That one dies, splat. And they just kind of get used to seeing the cycle where, okay, I guess that's just the piece. We see people, these bird people, going splat. And Vashti is the first bird to leave. And she goes out in the audience and she spreads these pamphlets. And she's like, look, I can't say no by myself. But if everyone here gets together and we learn how to say no, it's going to be powerful enough to mess up this system. And on my signal, everyone's got to do it. Like, you promise you're in. You promise you're in. And so we're going to have the whole audience scream, no! Uh-huh. And that no is going to throw the whole system out. And actually, we'll have professional mourners come in. So these are called klogerins. This is a real thing that historically existed in Ashkenazi Jewish communities. Women who were paid to wail and weep and mourn on behalf of other people. We have keeners in the Irish tradition, so there's a lot of traditions throughout the world where this role exists. The professional mourners will come in and they'll say, hey, we haven't had enough time to grieve and to process. You need to slow down, and you need to make space to feel the grief that you're all feeling so we can actually sensitize ourselves to what's happening and use our minds and our hearts to be aware of what's going on. And they're going to bring a big nest. And they're going to bring all the bird people into their nest for their bird therapy. And then we'll put an egg in the nest when that bird has been healed and talked through. And then we'll dance.
Oh yeah, can you introduce yourself?
I'm a person of many names. Some people call me Zadie or Sadie or Z. And I have been living in Northampton my whole life. I grew up here and I love my community and I love making opportunities for people to learn how to build things out of trash and make big art and celebrate.
My name is Yael Horowitz and I came all the way from New York for this.
So as part of this parade, wait, Sarah, what are you working on out here in the garage?
Well, right now I'm just starting to make a nest that's going to go in a piece of the performance. So I have some pool noodles out here, and Eva and I are figuring out how to turn pool noodles, cardboard, and probably some vines and ivy into a big nest that's going to come over the top of the seat of this carriage in a transformational moment of the piece.
Okay, and when you say carriage, you mean like a genuine, like, horse-drawn chariot minus the horse.
Yeah, our friend Emmett Leader bought this beautiful Amish-built horse-drawn carriage a few weeks ago and is lending it to us for the parade, so we're going to have a good time pulling it through the streets, probably by people, not horses, but
yeah,
it's really beautiful.
Cool. Thanks. I was also on my trip back to the radio station this afternoon. I ran into Ben. We were talking about the train and the... That's okay. I'll just talk and you can correct me.
Okay.
Ben's
okay.
Shy. We both noticed last time we took the train to Chicago out that direction, all the Amish people that were getting on the train in the Amish homesteads next to the tracks. And Ben was just saying how, like, the non-Amish people, how that culture generally, like, I don't know, like a mainstream American culture, how there's lots of depressed farms and buildings falling apart, and then the Amish buy up some of the land that the other mainstream Americans couldn't afford to stay on.
It's like 19th century economic versus 21st century or like 20th century economic. It's like the 20th century economics is mining the farmland, and so they just get poorer and poorer.
Mm-hmm.
And like their vehicles and buildings get more decrepit, and then the Amish move in with the 19th century frugality or whatever you want to call it, and they start just fixing it back up, and it's just like, seems like the Northeast is just turning over in that way.
And what about the telephone? What'd you see them do with the telephone poles?
Oh, just one of the coolest things was like the last like pole that would bring the electric line into the farmhouse. They would like pull off the electric line and replace it with this massive clothesline they could do bed sheets on. They'd come out of the second floor window and go up to this like telephone pole where the electric line used to come in, and you would just see the laundry flap in there, and it was like a nice... like F you to the electric company as well as being functional.
Yeah, when I was on the train to Chicago with a carload of Amish people and we were going through northern Indiana, and they would be like, they got excited pointing out the window at houses, at homesteads that we were going by. And they were talking in German, which I didn't understand. I guess it was German. And then I asked them in English, what's so exciting? And they're like, we're going through Amish territory. Look, you can see that's an Amish house. It's an Amish home. And I was like, how can you tell? And they say, well, for one thing, you can see the laundry that's hanging out on the line.
Yeah, that was always how I could tell in northern New York.
Yeah.
Oh, and then like the hand gathered corn stalks on the farm fields. That was really neat.
Uh-huh, like bundled up.
Yeah, I forgot what that's called. I mean, like you could tell the difference between shocks or something.
Oh, yeah, it sounds...
corn shocks or shucks or something. There's some, like, term for it, but, like, yeah, you go through and all of a sudden the field looks like it's been worked by hand versus by, like, you know, one massive tractor.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just, like, you know, it looks like a turf field. Yeah, anyway, so...
Yeah. Anyway, that's all the clips I have for today. Thanks for listening to this edition of Out There.
Smoked the last one an hour ago. the scenery. She read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. Jersey Turnpike, they've all